order, since we have a quorum.
We do, we do.
Roll call, please.
Judy Diversa?
Here.
Greg Fagan?
Here.
Terry Brown?
Here.
Molly Stoltman? Glenn Harvey?
Here.
Tomas Waitman's excused. Myron Human?
Here.
Dick Verdean?
Here.
Verdean?
Verdean, okay. Marcy Hartney? Is it Marcy? Andre Verona? And Bruce Bastian?
Bastian.
Bastian. You have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, great, thank you. We need a motion to adopt the agenda for today, February 4th. Second, Judy. Any additions, deletions? Any members? Seeing none, call a question, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Need a motion to approve the minutes for December 3rd, 2014.
So moved.
Moved in, Myron, second.
No.
Yeah, Dick, second.
Dick, this doesn't.
He's a buzzer.
You can speak up.
You should just rotate. I can't see the hands going that fast. There's so much cooperation.
You should just rotate clockwise around the room.
Yeah, I figured, well, okay, it's your turn, huh? Any additions, deletions, clarifications on the minutes by anyone? Seeing none, I'll call the question, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
I will say the last meeting was very full, and we did not get to a number of information items. And they're quite interesting, too. I guess we've lost that.
I was going to move on, but if you'd like me to bring any of those items back for your presentation to you, we'd be happy to do it.
You want to do that on the agenda, since we have other information items, and just them all, the ones you didn't do?
I was thinking for a future meeting.
He hasn't got it committed to them poorly prepared.
Well, I think this one.
I'm both for Dick.
Why don't you let me know which ones in particular you might like a presentation of? We did provide the information in the backup material.
Yes.
So whatever you'd like us to focus on or bring to you for discussion, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay.
Or send an email and everybody, if anybody, we did have a pretty full packed agenda there last time.
And evacuation.
Yes. Just forgot about that.
Yeah.
That wasn't in the minutes, was it?
It was, yes.
Terry, you were climbing up the stairs all day, like, oh my God, my knee's killing me.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll do it that way then. Any of the items from that last, we'll bring back. Okay, any comments from the chair, non-executive director's report?
All right, a few items for you this afternoon. First, for those of you who don't know, Bruce did announce his candidacy for Delaware City Commission. Bruce Bastian is a member of this committee, so I don't know if that's why he's not here. He didn't tell me he wasn't coming, but I just thought it would be information for the general good. Yeah, I believe it is.
Is that a conflict of interest, or is that something they can't serve if they're elected official? Or?
Yeah, I don't think we would keep him on the committee if he becomes an elected official.
That's against the bylaws, I think.
He can go on the board.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, sorry. He was having a dental conflict. That's so unrelated to his ambitions. That's the reason he's not here.
It's like pulling teeth, getting information out.
Getting people to come to these meetings.
Ooh.
All right. Second, kind of following up on the personnel, it's my pleasure to formally introduce to you Valerie Nielsen as our new transit coordinator from the MPO.
Hello.
And also want to introduce Fran Taylor, who is our new bike ped coordinator in the MPO.
Fran.
So both of them started. Fran was here last time. Yes. She was here in December because we brought her down from Birmingham, where she came from, to get to know all of you a little bit and kind of make sure she was really willing to invest herself in the South Florida culture. And she's here. She's moved down here now. So
what culture? What culture is he talking about?
And you're very brave to want them to get to know us.
Yeah, that's right. And I just want to say to them and to you, they've really hit the ground running and they've been incredible assets to the MPO already. So we're glad to have them on board.
Great.
Great. Welcome.
Another administrative point for us on the personnel side, you know Renee Benezra retired in January. We have made an offer to a secretary to replace her. We're working through the human resource process to bring that lady on board. We hope to have her on board by the March meeting. Elizabeth is counting the days.
Not that I don't like you guys,
yeah,
but.
For those of you who haven't, right, so for those of you who haven't met Elizabeth, she typically handles the board and the technical committee, and then Renee was handling the citizens committee as well as the VPAC, the bicycle pedestrian group, and the transit. Transportation Disadvantaged Local Coordinating Board. So Elizabeth's filling in right now and is glad to be here. Next item for you, we as staff, we rode tri-rail down to Delray Beach for our annual office lunch in December, and we learned how important it is to time the trolley service with the train arrival. We actually, on the way back from lunch, we rode the trolley from East Atlantic Avenue back to the tri-rail station, and we pulled into the tri-rail station as the train was pulling away from the tracks. We lost an hour of our lives in that one instant. So that was a good lesson for us, especially because we did the rolling retreat with the board in January. That was a fantastic experience. And we had both staff and agencies all hands on deck making sure that every connection was made. We didn't leave anyone behind. And had a very, very successful day. Following up on transit, Palm Tran Connection started their new contract with three new entities. They moved from Metro Mobility to, I'm not going to remember the names of all three of them, but the three
first,
new
First Transit.
First.
And I actually forget the third name, was a smaller company. Mm-hmm. But I got two calls from Shannon Rothko already.
Yeah.
Because I'm the chair of the paratransit subcommittee.
So
they said they're doing all right, but I don't know.
Right. I mean, it's going to be a bumpy transition, but the county did assume dispatch responsibility,
yep.
So that was one big transition to the service, and they introduced 231 new vehicles into the system. So, but the vehicles are going to be driven by the three new contractors and then also maintained by the contractors, and we're hoping that that provides a more efficient and reliable service for the riders. Want to make sure you guys are aware, the DOT is performing a major update to the Florida Transportation Plan, as well as the Strategic Intermodal System, or SIS, Cost Feasible Plan. They're doing those two things together this time. That's like a statewide version of the long-range plan that we just adopted for Palm Beach County. They are seeking public participation, agency participation, input, et cetera, in five regional forums that they're conducting around the state. The forum for Southeast Florida is tomorrow afternoon, and it's going to be in Delray Beach. So we were fortunate enough to host, I don't know if that's because they didn't want to go any farther south, but that's as far south as they're going. Anybody that from Miami or the Keys that wants to provide input has to come all the way up to Delray Beach to do that. So that's tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock in their old school square gymnasium. And we did provide agendas for that at the sign-in table. So if you'd like one of those. Next item, we're going to be making an MPO proclamation at our February 19th board meeting, declaring March as Florida Bike Month in Palm Beach County. And in order to support this initiative, we're working with Commuter Services to create a central website for all biking events and information related to bicycling in Palm Beach County. We're also working with county parks, local governments, and other stakeholders to populate that calendar of events and try to promote awareness of bicycling with a focus on March, but with the ability to use that website as a resource in an ongoing manner. And so we're encouraging our local governments to make a similar proclamation as well as provide any biking events to us so that we could put them on the calendar. And then one more business item. I saw three administrative amendments to the work program, meaning they don't come before you as an advisory committee, they don't come before the MPO board, but they were provided to me as information items to implement the state's rural areas of opportunity funding for three projects in Palm Beach County. There was a $9 million legislative allocation, and I want to say $3.5 million of that went to the western communities of Palm Beach County. We have a $1.4 million resurfacing job, East Main Place in Pahokee, the $1.4 million resurfacing job in South Bay, MLK Boulevard that provides access between the US 27, State Road 80 intersection, and an elementary school at the west end of that corridor. And then a $500,000 project resurfacing South Canal Street in Belleville. And there were four or five other corridors in Belleville that were also going to be receiving funds, but they fall below the 500,000 threshold to even tell me about them. So just area of interest for you to note that those investments are being made by the state to maintain local infrastructure. Last item in my report to you, in case any of you are college basketball fans, my alma mater, the University of Kentucky, is 22-0. And they're playing the Florida Gators this Saturday. So we're looking forward to bringing that undefeated record down to Gainesville and seeing how we do.
And you going up to the game?
We're not going up for the game. We're gonna watch it.
Is that just going to be the Gators in the room?
How many there are tonight? Yeah, I'm not sure. How many Gator grads we had?
The Seminole.
There you go.
Nick, can I ask you a question on your fit?
Yes, I'm done.
Not for any inside information, but is there any recent developments on all aboard Florida about what's happening with the Coast Guard and what's happening with their bonds and what's the deal? Are they still moving forward pretty completely?
Why don't I get a status report from them and distribute that to the committee by email?
Who? Who would that be from?
My contact is Allie Soule, who's their public information officer for their project. And so I would say, just tell us the status of where you are, what your next steps.
What's the role of the Treasure Coast planning, Regional Planning Council? I know that Kim was involved somehow. She contracted with them or with someone else? Do you know?
Kim, the Treasure Coast role in reviewing that project was primarily to consolidate comments and concerns from all of the different local governments in the region as part of the environmental impact study that the All Aboard Florida project was required to submit through the Federal Rail Administration. So she was working for the Treasure Coast Planning Council, not for All Aboard Florida, identifying impacts and suggesting appropriate mitigations.
So they've taken sort of a neutral position. They're not working for the governments. They're not working for the railroad.
As far as how Treasure Coast is,
yeah,
knowing their role?
The people in Martin County and north are the ones that are jumping up and down the loudest.
Frankly, Treasure Coast, the Planning Council staff are handling their role carefully.
Yeah. Since they're all elected officials on that board.
Well, because they have a divided set of interests. I mean, this was one of the projects that sort of prompted the discussion about whether Palm Beach County should remain in the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council, or whether they would be better suited to move into the South Florida Planning Council.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah, so I think the way Kim is handling it is she wants to fully understand what the project is seeking to accomplish, the All Aboard Florida project. What are the impacts of that project on the local governments, and what can we do about it? She's basically trying to answer those three questions. And they kind of focus their attention on marine navigable waterway impacts, Loxahatchee River Bridge, St. Lucie Bridge, and train horn noise at the crossings and road closure impacts at road crossings throughout the region.
But as far as the financing goes, they're still applying for the loan that they were through the Federal Transportation Group or whatever it was. Is that still on the table for them, or do they withdraw that and try to issue bonds? Do you remember?
I don't know. I was under the impression, just from what I read, that the federal grant was approved.
No.
It's not a loan grant.
The loan, there was something that they got approval for, but I don't know if it was a grant or tax-exempt bonds.
Yes. It's my understanding, and I'd like to confirm this, and I'll distribute it formally to you by email, but it's my understanding that they've actually withdrawn their request for the rail infrastructure financing loans.
That's what I thought.
But they have gotten federal approval for tax-free activity bonds. So that means they can issue bonds to private investors that will earn interest tax-free.
But there's not government funds going in there, they're just, no.
The government's role in granting that is to allow for the tax-free status.
Right.
And a condition of that tax-free status is that all of North Florida complete the environmental impact study process. And identify and comply with any mitigation required by that study so that they can maintain that status. But, and basically the federal government has said, if you don't finish the process or if you don't do what the process asks you to do, we're going to revoke your tax-free status. That's the only hammer I think they have at their disposal. So, Mr. Chair, I'm operating a little bit on memory and not
just
fresh input.
And the agency is responsible for the environment.
I don't know what you mean.
I had a question. I do have a question. I'm the chair of the Los Angeles River Communities Coalition. We're like 1,000 homes along and on the Loxahatchee River. I'm very interested to know what you're finding out, and not just from their PR person, because
that's what I do. I'm glad you brought it up.
I don't know who Kim is that you reference.
Oh, Kim Delaney from Treasure Coast.
Okay.
She knows a lot, by the way.
Okay.
A lot.
And I can get an update from Kim,
yes,
regarding the evaluation of the impacts of the Loxahatchee.
I don't know if she'll publicly speak, but
okay. I really appreciate if you would keep me up to date with things that you would find out that I might not be privy to.
If you send it to all the committee members, then that size up all. Right.
Yep. Andre, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Nick, is that something where we could have a representative from All Aboard Florida come in and do an update? Because it seems to be changing all the time. But is that something we want to do here to keep us informed? Does it tie in, or is it really not applicable?
I'll ask. I mean, at the least, I have been coordinating with their team to try to provide updates to the MPO board and our committees through me. I'll see if they want to come and do a presentation to you in person.
Marion, do you have a question?
Yes, it was what agency is responsible for the environmental impact statement?
Interestingly, the Federal Railroad Administration is responsible for the analysis. So the buck stops with them.
Yep.
And when we did they asked for a series of public workshops to be conducted. And when they did the workshop in West Palm, it was FRA staff running the workshop, telling everyone what was proposed, what the evaluation entailed, what the impacts were shown to be. And they had an interesting station at the workshop that showed the time the bridge would be closed to allow a freight train to cross, time that it would be closed to allow passenger train to cross, how frequent those things would occur, how many boats would queue up on a weekday and on a weekend. So they're looking into all of that stuff, trying to make sure they did it properly.
The follow-up question, maybe you don't know the answer to this, but NEPA requires an environmental impact statement for a federal action. Since federal money is no longer involved, the federal loan is not. Does it really require an environmental impact statement anymore? All of it is a tax-exempt decision. I'm not sure that's a federal action that requires an environmental impact statement.
It was my understanding that that was the hook the federal government was using to require completion of the EIS, the tax-exempt status. But
okay.
I'll see if I can find a document that says that, so I'm not just reporting hearsay.
And if you have someone from All Aboard Florida, would you also have someone from staff that could give us the other point of view?
I think there's a consensus by the citizens, not only in the room, but the ones especially in the north end of the county, about the impact on the navigable waterways, the Loxahatchee River seems, and even I'm even here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just a little did was get stuck in the car on our bikes waiting for the railroad to go by. Because there were so many freight trains.
Yeah, they
double track.
Then slowly
over time, the demand for freight went down, and they tore out the second set of tracks because they didn't need it and didn't want to maintain it. This is pre-tri-rail. And tri-rail comes along, okay, you might wait for a couple seconds for a tri-rail, not a big deal. We don't have the freight that we used to have. And there is a fear of the public that I speak to, that this is obfuscated into a, this is really a freight deal financed by this, oh, we're running 24 trains a day. Nobody believes the 24 trains a day. Nobody believes this. It's ever going to go over.
Well,
it's
going to
stop. And there's a perception in the general public, especially these people who live on these navigable waterways, that this is kind of a not genuine being presented to the public, and everybody's jumping on, maybe let's say this is great, you know, trains in Miami, etc., but it just doesn't seem to add up. I think that's the summary, if I could try to just put that together, the result concerned with is this, and I think all the questions are real, is this really what's happening here, or are we getting a snow job?
Mm-hmm.
And it is a problem on the New River. There's a tremendous amount of industry down there. That bridge takes 22 minutes once it goes up to go back down. So you take a bunch of big boats in 22 minutes, you take the Loxahatchee River, it's got a 8-9 knot current running through there at certain times, and you put them all in something that's not even 30 feet wide, put a couple of sport fishermen in there, or a 30 footer, you're going to have problems. We used to have problems. And I think that's why there's a lot of groups up in Jupiter that are very much against this.
But they're putting down the double tracks where they can already, aren't they? Can we see them working on it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, is it really passenger or is it freight?
I don't think so. I think it's freight.
Yeah, that's what everybody thinks.
I think freight trains are going
to
be as long as the engine can pull. And when they open up the big ports, Miami and South, for the big super tankers, those trains are going to be pulling who knows how many cars.
And the financing mechanism. This passenger.
Yeah, no.
So you give away $100 million of stations, in essence.
Yeah.
So it's all about the passengers. It's never going to be 30 passengers.
Well, they might do one or two trains a day, but no 32.
Yeah, they said 32 trains a day, and our bridge is still a bridge. It looks like it was constructed at the beginning of this century, or maybe the last century. So it's gonna be a nightmare no matter what happens.
Well,
so.
But if you look at what the canal is being expanded, the expectation is all the containers that currently come to California, Washington, and Vancouver, and are freight and railed across the country, will now come to the East Coast.
Right.
Okay. And some people in Miami believe that they'll all stop in Miami.
That's what they think.
Right. Now, if you think about Flagler building this railroad to Key West, the reason he built the railroad to Key West was to take coal to Key West so when the canal opened, the ships would refuel in Key West with coal. It never happened because they converted to oil. It is much cheaper to move a container by ship than by rail. So if a container is destined to New York, there's no reason to stop in Miami.
But
the question is, how much freight will actually come up the Florida East Coast? And I agree with you. It's a freight move. It's not a passenger move.
It's a real estate and a freight move.
Right. And a casino in Miami.
Well, another thing that I think people are missing, because we live up here, I have some interest in Miami, not financial, but I have people that live down there, and I go down there for other reasons. Miami was just voted the most exciting city in the world by Florida Trend Magazine, our own business magazine in Florida. There are people coming into Miami from all over Latin America. There's cranes of construction of condos. There's 70 condos going up in downtown Miami. They expect people to come into Miami for fun and living and condo, and they want them to go to Orlando for Walt Disney World. I mean, that's the concept. And there are people there. And they're selling those condos for cash for millions of dollars, right? They come up with 50% down and 50% enclosure.
It's capital flight.
Not a check.
Capital flight.
Huh?
It's capital flight.
Yeah, exactly.
Taking money.
They want to get their money out of those countries into the United States.
Into the United States.
So that's going to be a boom for the next 25 years.
Yeah, the station's already under construction, and I was living in downtown Miami and Miami Beach, and the station's already under construction in the downtown, and a lot of those buildings coming up aren't even providing parking. So people are expected to use transit to get to.
Exactly.
And every day, buses leave out of Miami Beach with all these people. They arrive in Miami from Europe, from South America. They spend a day in Miami Beach, and then they take these buses to Orlando to Disney and all the things that they're going to do there. So they're excited about it down there.
Yes. My wife has a business interest on a building in Brickell, and she has to pay to park in that building.
Yep. I live there and I paid $175 a month to park.
Crazy.
I don't know why you're here. Well, I don't. Maybe we need some kind of a. I don't know if there's anything we can do at this particular.
You're putting
point,
Nick on the spot.
Well, there's a huge. There's a navigable. Issue, navigable water issue. That's Coast Guard. I don't think Coast Guard signed off on any of the shed. There's no improvements related to those. Mainly Loxetcher River, the New River, they're big. St. Lucie's got a little bit of elevation, not much though. But it really does affect the rivers.
I would say that all of North Florida, the PR people have a problem. They haven't, there's so much doubt and concern about. They haven't really explained and answered all the kinds of questions that they're around here. Because on the surface, it just doesn't seem like it's a passenger service.
I would think that the Loxetcher River also would be protected federally because it's the only one of the scenic river that's been designated as such in the United States. So it carries a certain prestige, a certain singular recognition that they, I would hope, would be very, very careful of the river and not just the other line.
I don't know whether the Coast Guard's, I don't know if it's an environmental impact they do or habitable. I know that it's not finalized yet. There's the bottom land they're building the buildings, the downtown lands. I think that passed the county commission, didn't it?
Which one?
The downtown station, the Fern. I guess it's.
It's passed the local thing. It's got to go to the legislature, but they're going to approve it.
All right, if you overall, something's not right here.
But just if we have someone from all of North Florida, it's like their shiny sheet that they sent out as a pre-art thing. I looked at it and thought, this doesn't sound at all like what's happening in my neighborhood. Everybody's excited and thrilled and, can't wait for it. And I have people calling me up going, what are we going to do? And so I would like to hear from staff. And I don't know if it would be the Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council or what. But
yeah.
I'd love to hear. I always love to hear both sides.
Sounds good.
It's more favorable from downtown West Palm Beach south than it is from downtown West Palm Beach north because of the river impact. It's not popular where the new river is and all the boaters that are down there.
And the speed increases in that area too. They're allowed to go faster as soon as they get to Martin County and over that bridge.
Yeah. All right. That was the end of the executive director's report and comments.
Well, that was a good discussion. Right?
General public comments. Anybody here from the public want to speak? Seeing none. Close that portion. Action items. Item A. Come on. board term for like fiscal year 16-20 work program summary document.
We are, I am going to talk to you from the map in front of you. So this morning we had the Turnpike staff here. I'm going to do my best job of summarizing the presentation that they made to our technical committee. First, I want you to understand why this item is on the agenda. We did hear the DOT work program in December, and we were given an opportunity to identify any concerns, objections, requests for funding at that time. The Turnpike presented their work program as part of that overall package in December. Then they came to me after the committees had received it, after we had created the MPO board agenda, and said 2 days before the board meeting, oops, we left out a bunch of stuff, can we just slip it in? And I said, no, let's not do it that way. Why don't we bring you back in February and let you highlight what you're actually going to be working on over the next 5 years in a little more detail. We'll shine the spotlight on you and give you an opportunity to tell us what you're doing and why you're doing it. So that's why the item's back on the agenda in February. And the second, I want to make sure you understand the role of the MPO and its committees. Our primary purpose in reviewing this item is to evaluate the work that they're proposing to do for consistency with our long-range plan and with our project priority list. And as a part of that review, we can highlight any items of potential concern. One of the items I want you to note is that the Turnpike is proposing to widen the main line from 4 lanes to 6 lanes between Lake Worth Road and Okeechobee Boulevard. They want to put design in fiscal year 16. Currently, the 6-lane section, maybe I ought to stand and talk from the map. Currently, the Turnpike is 6 lanes all the way from Broward County to the Lantana Toll Plaza.
Yeah.
At the Toll Plaza, it narrows down to 4 lanes. What the Turnpike is suggesting to us is that they would leave this segment for a period of time as a 4-lane road, and they would widen out from Lake Worth Road north to Okeechobee Boulevard. They would make this a 6-lane section. Our priority list that was adopted by the MPO back in October suggests that we should do this all as one project from the Lantana Toll Plaza all the way up to Okeechobee Boulevard so that we don't create this interim bottleneck. So that's one of the items that we may, you can choose to say, well, we don't like the timing you're suggesting. We want you to put those back together. The reason they gave us for the separation was the all-electronic tolling project, this Phase 5A project that goes from all the way down at 595 to south of Lantana Road to the Toll Plaza here, including the conversion of the Toll Plaza gantries. They said that that project, which is scheduled for construction in fiscal year 18, needs to be completed first before they can widen from the Toll Plaza up to Lake Worth Road. So that's why they're suggesting that that bottleneck condition might be reasonable and appropriate in the short term. I don't know that that's an engineering challenge that can't be overcome. The technical committee decided this morning to ask them to look harder at that and say, let's see if we can't do it all as one project. So that's one of the items. I can walk through the maintenance items on here, or I can let you guys just tell me what you would like to talk about, if anything. The list of projects, because there are some significant improvements that are being proposed at this point in time.
Well, when I read it, I was wondered why they would do the expansions in a non-continuous way, or the issue that you raised. It just doesn't make a lot of sense from the user's perspective.
It can't be a right-of-way problem.
Not right-of-way. Definitely not right-of-way. They're working completely within state control.
Right.
Plan.
So what is their argument?
Well, I think it's that tolling conversion that they said. And the guy that was here he's planning for the entire state. He's out of Turkey Lake in Orlando. He wasn't intimately familiar with any constructability issues that might cause this sequence. But one of the goals of this committee could be to say, well, unless you present us with a compelling argument to do it in this sequence, we think you should do it together. Make it a 6-lane continuous section so that you don't have that narrowing and expanding as you travel forward.
Was there some explanation about why the toll, going all electronic for the tolling, had to be done before the expansion of the lanes just north of it.
Okay, how does that make sense?
It, I mean, it had to happen, but I didn't follow. We didn't press him for details.
Right now, going northbound, for example, there are two lanes going through automatic tolls and two lanes through booths, and they all have to, those four lanes merge into two lanes.
Yeah.
And so I can't understand why an extra lane going northbound from there was not, couldn't be done before.
In the technical committee's request, they said, okay, fine, we approve this schedule, but our request to you is modify that line item so that you widen the section from the toll plaza to Lake Worth Road while you're doing the work on the entrance. Do it at the same time. Build three lanes continuously through the toll facility, which is going to be a high-speed electronic toll facility. No more will there be two high-speed lanes, two slow-down and process of ticket lanes. Do the widening at that time so you get all the way to Lake Worth. And that's an action item available to you in response to their proposal.
The three lanes goes through the barrier, I believe. The three lanes comes in and it becomes two after.
Correct. Well, right. As Myron pointed out, three lanes actually becomes four
at
the plaza, and then narrows back to two on the north side of the plaza.
Right. So with the all electronic, they're all going to need three lanes.
Correct.
Because you're either going through straight or you're not going through. So they have to redo the entire road work in that area at the toll plaza because they have to get rid of some barriers and shrink it down to size.
Right.
And I'm pointing that out for your information. But I agree, it should be either with this proposal of all tolling or right after it. Because you either, yeah.
Let me at least highlight what they're suggesting. It's actually pretty simple. From the Lantana Toll Plaza all the way up to PGA, they're programming initial phasing design to widen that from four lanes to six lanes. Focusing on Lake Worth to Okeechobee first, then on Okeechobee to PGA, and filling this gap. That's their proposed sequence. At the same time, they're proposing eight lanes from the Broward County line all the way up to Boynton Beach Boulevard, coming to here. So this is currently six lanes, and they're suggesting that it needs to go from six to eight lanes, and they're asking for funding for design of those segments in either fiscal year 15, which is the TIP amendment, item 2B on your agenda, or fiscal year 16 through 20, which I think the rest of the design, this is in fiscal year 16 and this is in fiscal year 16. They're asking for approval of the work program because that's not the current year, that doesn't require the TIP amendment, that's in the next 5 years. It's just telling you what they're going to be working on. So that's the mainline summary. And then the only other items I want you to be aware of, there are intersection improvements planned at the Glades Road interchange and at the PGA Boulevard interchange. PGA, they're going to be adding, right now there's a single left turn lane coming from the west to get onto the turnpike. They'll be providing a second left turn lane, so it'll be two left turns to go on. And if you come from the east, there's a right turn that continuously merges onto the on-ramp. That's going to be converted to two right turn lanes to provide a little bit more capacity for cars entering the turnpike. That's the summary of their improvements there. Glades Road, I think it's a couple of turn lanes. Maybe the westbound to northbound on-ramp is going from a single lane to two right turn lanes at Glades.
I thought it was that they were adding a second northbound exit lane and two right turn lanes from the interchange to go west on Glades.
You may be right. I was going from memory.
I can think I read that. That's what I read, which will do nothing. It won't. Because the problem is not going right, it's going left.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But when you get off Glades?
Yeah.
Head east on
you go on the other side of Glades.
Yeah. What?
But
Yeah, going west on Glades.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
There's never a back cut.
That's the
problem. Yeah, but they can't.
How many lanes turn to go left?
Three. And the road has three lanes.
Yeah. So what are they going to do with that?
Well, I think Nick has told us that Boca Raton does not want to expand that beyond three lanes each side.
They don't want to expand Glades Road.
Well, they don't want to expand Glades Road. So the
turn lanes don't want.
Can't have four turn lanes and three lanes.
Right. So.
But the question I have related to that is, Jupiter doesn't want to expand Indian Town Road to three, more than three. Glades doesn't want to, Boca doesn't want to expand. Where do they anticipate the traffic going of all the houses and apartments and condos that they're approved?
Well, now you ask a very deep question.
My question is just, in case I missed it, when they widen this proposal to widen the Lake Worth over Chile, the design phase, we've already passed that, so.
No, that would be the
design.
That
would be for the design.
When it says PE,
this is the design.
PE means preliminary engineering.
Oh, I see.
To get to construction, it has to say CON or CST or something like that.
So this whole resurface part of it, that's all still design?
No.
The resurface says CST.
CST.
That means construction.
Construction, gotcha.
There's no design needed in resurface.
So what they're saying is they're going to design the widening in 16, but resurface it in 17.
And so when they come back to widen it again, will they have to request, I mean, it seems like.
The problem is it's a 5-year plan. So, and right now, for all these widenings, in the current 5-year plan, it's only preliminary engineering.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so that the construction is beyond 2020.
So what happens to the construction dollars that are there now?
Those are resurfacing.
Those are resurfacing.
So they'll just.
Yeah, the resurface was exactly.
Yeah. Just maintenance. Just maintenance.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense that
the surface doesn't last about 5 years. So.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the consensus of the committee here.
Why
create it? You do 8 lanes, 6 lanes, to expand both sides of the hourglass.
I don't think it ever makes sense to create a bottleneck intentionally, because we're all going to hate to be that person being squished into that area. And I think doing something from start to finish.
It's inherently dangerous to have a bottleneck.
It is.
You know, we had this discussion about 6 months ago with respect to Northlake Boulevard, where they're going to expand part of Northlake Boulevard and then a connecting section which is still 2 lanes, 4 lanes, 2 lanes, 4 lanes, just doesn't make any sense. So if I could make a motion, I'd like to move that we receive this information, acknowledge it, and suggest that the timing be reevaluated so that there are no bottlenecks defined as number of lanes being reduced and then expanded again as you go in one direction.
Okay, 1 second while we have that motion on the floor. Are you actually finished with your presentation on this?
Yeah, I don't have any other questions you guys want.
Well, I'll leave it to you to make it.
Yeah, Judy, second. Myron, who made the motion, Judy, second.
I think Molly, second. Did you say?
Judy.
Oh, I heard someone.
I'll be third.
You'll be third.
I'd just like there was one comment on the motion. One of the things that you notice living here is that the population doubles during this time of year. And the impact for all those of us that are driving around on the road all day long, this particular month has been tremendous in the increase.
Park City. I was on North Lake Boulevard, on PGA Boulevard last night, trying to make a left-hand turn. There was so much traffic coming the other way. The light turned red, but they were all in the intersection.
Five to six.
All the time. Piled into the intersection, and
that's everywhere.
Cross traffic couldn't go through on the green cycle because they were all just piled in the intersection.
They won't let you in.
And the traffic, it was blocks long, three lanes, completely filled.
All day long.
This is PGA in front of the mall, in front of Gardens Mall.
That's a very difficult spot.
This is 6:30 at night, well after rush hour, I would have thought.
Seems to be everywhere, no matter where you are.
So Nick, did we get to where you wanted to be?
Okay. We have a motion, we have a second. Any further discussion, comments by the committee? Seeing none, call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Just so we got that over with, just one quick question about the Boynton Beach entrance and exits there. Is there any plan to do anything with the going south and exiting off the way it loops there and the lanes merging together with the people coming in going south? You know what I'm talking about? In Boynton Beach Boulevard? I mean, when there's a lot of traffic, you have people entering to go south on the turnpike. Then you have people who are exiting on a loop and they're bumper to bumper. One's coming over this way and one's going over that way.
Same way.
You know what I'm talking about?
It's the thing that they wanted to avoid is the potential good road presence. So you don't, everyone's not jockeying the same way. You want in and I want out.
Yeah.
It's gonna happen.
It's the last vestiges of a clover loop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you get off southbound and you pass the northbound entrance.
Yeah, and they're coming in right at you. And you have like a maybe 50 yards to get over to the exit. I was just wondering if there was any review of that situation. Probably be 20 years before they do anything about it. But that whole area is booming. GL Home is building up homes every acre out there.
Okay, we'll go and move on to the next item. Item 2B, the amendments to the fiscal year 2015-2019 Transportation Improvement Program.
To answer Mr. Brown's question, I'm not aware of a project to address that location, although there is a project to provide a second eastbound to northbound left turn at the northbound ramps. I was trying to pull it up to better illustrate it, but let me look into the scope of work.
Yeah. What's a left turn if you're going west? Your left turn, and then you do a loop going north.
Yeah.
And you're merging with the traffic coming from the south, and that's also dangerous.
If we're going on to 2B, action item, did we actually recommend approval of the 1620 work program summary with the exception of this bottleneck, or did we only address the bottleneck?
Myra doesn't typically like to recommend approval. So I think the motion actually recommended or received the work program with a request to schedule the projects without a bottleneck.
Do we want to approve the, I mean?
It's up to the committee. They're going to go forward with this plan. They're going to be required to respond to any suggested changes you make. Whether you vote to approve or you just vote to receive, I think is your preference as to what type of action you feel comfortable with as a committee. But the critical question is, are you asking them to do something different?
Which we are.
And you are, and I captured that.
Okay.
So we will carry that message to them and we will get a response for you.
Okay. I just want to be sure the eyes were dotted and
these
crowds.
So when everything's successful, you can't claim credit for it.
I never collect credit for anything.
All right, we're on.
Nick, the
look at regional projects, it says that the limits of phase 5A will begin at I-595 on the turnpike in Broward and south of the Lantana toll plaza. Not north of it, and it doesn't include it. And that may be, because I think the next barrier north of the Lantana toll barrier is all the way up north of Orlando.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Let me get a better. I mean, we're going to make sure. We're going to communicate to them that we don't want the bottleneck. Right now, their request to us is that they would widen from Lake Worth to Okeechobee. They would put the design at 16, and from Lantana toll plaza to Lake Worth, they wouldn't even do the design until 20.
Right.
We don't want that scenario. They told me that it was the all-electronic tolling. I don't know if this is the only phase. I have in my head that there's a second phase of all-electronic tolling conversion that includes the toll plaza, but it's not on this graphic, so I need to research why I think that's there.
There is one there. I recollect there's one also.
Yeah.
And I think it includes from the Lantana, it includes the Lantana toll plaza all the way north to the other.
Yeah.
To the other.
Barrier. Okay.
This bridge is construction timing, right? It's not, the Lantana toll proof isn't in here because it's not going to be done until, so after 2020.
Yes. Okay, 2B is, the reason this is not a work program item, it's separate and handled as a TIF amendment, is because they're asking us to endorse, receive, approve, whatever you'd like to use as a verb, recognize that they would like to program design funds for two of the segments going from 6 lanes to 8 lanes in fiscal year 15, which means they want to spend the money now, we're in fiscal year 15, and get these particular road segments started right now. And the segments are from Glades to Atlantic, from Atlantic to Boynton, going from 6 lanes to 8 lanes.
I'll make that motion.
To approve.
I have another question. If we disagree with the first part of the plan, wouldn't we want them to add that segment now as part of the design? Can we say that's a preference?
Well, these are in tandem, right? Basically.
Well, so the first item was the work program, which addresses fiscal year 16 through 20.
And this is
and the concern we raised was that this segment up here is going in fiscal year 16, and this segment down here is going in fiscal year 20.
Right.
And you said, we don't like that strategy. Let's do them together.
Yes.
Now they're also saying the segments from Boynton to Atlantic and from Atlantic to Glades, they would like to design in fiscal year 15. Here and where's the other? And here, these two pieces. So they're asking separately for approval to take this from 6 lanes to 8 lanes in this section.
Okay.
So I think they're unrelated questions. I mean, the only timing issue I have with this is they're going from Boynton Beach to down to Atlantic and from Atlantic down to Glades. They're going to do the design in fiscal year 15. For widening this to 8 lanes, and they're not going to take the segment from Glades down to Broward County to 8 lanes until fiscal year 16. But that's a 1 year gap, and I think they'll catch up in the construction phase and they'll do that one continuously. So I'm not making a big issue out of that. But you can make an issue out of that. I mean, that's your purview.
I'm just asking the question. Maybe just seems out of sync only to me. So.
We have a motion on item 2B.
Exclusive or they?
Have a motion from Terry on item 2B, motion to approve the design 6 lane, 8 lane section from Glades to
from both
Beach.
Projects.
Both projects.
One and two.
We got a second from Molly.
All right, we got Molly on the road.
Okay. Any further comments or discussion on that motion?
That would feel better if we received it as opposed to approved it, but if that's the motion, I'll vote.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? to recommend receive and file the 2040 long-range transportation plan.
The brief presentation on this item is we presented the summary document in October. It was the culmination of 2 years' worth of work, a lot of presentations for the committee, a lot of opportunities for input. That long-range plan was adopted by the MPO board. This document seeks to explain all of the background assumptions and analysis that were performed that led to the full summary. It's a little bit backwards. Normally, we would have developed all of the detailed assumptions first, but we were working on a constrained timeline with some consultants that were not comfortable with some of the things that we were pressing them to do, and this is where we ended up. So we're acknowledging for you that there's a lot of detail that went into the plan, and we're asking you to recognize that. If you'd like to read it, that we provided a link. We didn't want to put the full document in your backup because it's 350 pages.
Thank you.
But we do want you to know that it exists and where you can find it.
So we need a motion to either recommend or not recommend receiving and filing the 2040 long-range transportation plan.
Recommend receiving.
Okay.
Receive and file.
Harry, second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call a question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. All right, information items. First one, 3A, local initiatives and transportation alternatives program schedule.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Fran Taylor and let her present this item for you.
Afternoon again.
Hello.
It's already open, Elizabeth.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Thank you. So the Palm Beach MPO announces the availability of the 2015 Transportation Alternatives and Local Initiatives program funding. Our programs kicked off on January 16th. Our application materials have been posted to the website on January 29th. We had an applicant workshop from 2 to 4. FDOT came out and answered some questions for those local entities that are interested in applying. We ask that all applications will be returned to the MPO by February 27th by noon. From February 27th through March 20th, the MPO will do an internal application screening process. That's something that FDOT's asking us to do to kind of let them know how things kind of fall out. We'll return that list back to them on March 20th. On April 1st, we're proposing a joint meeting of the Technical Advisory Committee and yourself, the Citizen Advisory Committee, to review the Transit Freight TSM Local Initiatives projects. Those who choose to participate in presenting, you'll be able to hear those presentations at that time. On April 2nd, we'll do the same thing, but for the transportation alternatives and non-motorized local initiative projects. On May 29th, we'll get the eligibility determinations back from FDOT, District 4. We'll receive priority lists. Go to the committees on July 1st and 2nd. The MPO board will make final recommendations on July 16th. And our final recommendations are due to FDOT on August 11th. Any questions? And the next piece of information is just that our contact information for myself, I'm Francesca Taylor, and if you need to contact me regarding any questions you may have for the Transportation Alternatives Program or Safe Boston School Program, my information is listed on the slide, as well as Luke Lambert, who will be in charge of the Local Initiatives Program.
How much money is available for this?
Yeah. Oh, in total for the Transportation Alternatives Program, we have $3.1 million. this year. Project minimums are $250,000, I believe.
And does it apply to all municipality roadways or projects that are not included in the state plan or county?
Yes. One of the, I guess, caveats is that they're not listed on any other funding program.
Okay.
So, yes. And then there are some eligibility determinations on according to what type of project is suitable.
Right. Okay. Good.
Okay.
I want to make sure that the committee caught this item because it's an important one.
April 1st.
So, on April 1st, what we're suggesting to you is that in lieu of meeting in the afternoon, we would have you come to a joint meeting with the technical committee in the morning to participate, if you are interested, in the review and scoring of applications that are received by the MPO in the transportation system management, freight, and transit categories. So we want your input, we want your participation, we want those two committees to collaborate on the review of those three categories of projects, and we want to make sure that you are planning your schedule appropriately so that you can participate in that event.
Would that meeting be here?
Yeah. It would be here.
Okay.
Yeah.
What would be the time frame? 9 o'clock?
We aren't sure how many applications we are going to receive and how well we'll be able to screen out eligibility, ineligible applications, so I'm not sure how long it'll be, but it will be a 9 a.m. start time, and we'll try to move expeditiously through the review. What we are asking, and this is another difference that we've never done before, it's kind of we're working our way through this local initiatives program, trying to give our local governments opportunity to pursue some of these federal funds. We're asking the applicants to provide a brief presentation to the scoring committee before we actually talk about the projects and develop our ranking system, or our ranking list. So this is new. We haven't done that before. We've done a similar process for this with the transportation alternatives projects. Historically, that's been a smaller list of applications because it's a smaller pot of money and only certain municipalities have taken the time and troubled themselves to pursue that. Fran mentioned the funding level for the T8, the Transportation Alternatives Program, is $3.1 million. The upper bound for an individual application is $750,000, so we're looking at between 4 and 5 applications for that pool of money. For the local initiatives program, our expected funding level is $17 million. Now, there may be some claims on that money because of projects that are already in the priority list that are not completely funded. So we may not have all $17 million available for newly funded projects or newly identified projects, but we're hoping to have as much of that available as possible for these local initiative projects. And the funding levels for that, the minimum is $250,000. The upper bound for those projects is $2.5 million. So it's a larger potential award for an individual project.
Okay. Anything else on 3A?
Yeah. What is BGPAC?
The Bicycle Greenway Pedestrian Advisory Committee. G is Greenway.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. And for some reason we call it the BPAC. The G is silent. I think they should have gone with Big Pack. It's kind of a catchy name, but they just called themselves the Big Pack.
Maybe I've seen it in more places with just Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee. So here we include greenways, but I think people refer to it in general as Big Pack in other places, so maybe just not easier.
PAC is sometimes a dirty word.
Yeah, I hear you.
Item 3B, the Department of Transportation, the Mayor's Challenge.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to turn it over to Valerie Nielsen for the presentation for this item. And that's already over to it. You just click on the PowerPoint. That's not the PowerPoint. Maybe it's not. Right there. And then hit the...
Is that the font?
Fox issued a challenge to mayors and local elected officials for safer people and safer streets. This is the website, so this is what it looks like, a bunch of information. This challenge is based on the 2010 policy statement for bicycle and pedestrian accommodations to create more complete streets and livable communities for and access for all abilities. The mayor's challenge participants, those elected officials who choose to participate in this challenge, will be invited to attend the mayor's summit for safer people, safer streets in March at the USDOT headquarters in DC. Basically, it's a call to action for these locally elected officials to issue a public statement about the importance of bicycle and pedestrian safety, form a local action team to advance safety and accessibility goals, and take local action through the challenge activities, which are these. And all these items are hyperlinked in the PowerPoint, so you can find out more information if you click on them. But these are the major areas that he's asking mayors and local elected officials to take on. So to promote complete streets, to fix barriers, to gather pedestrian and bicycle data, to design right, create networks, improve laws, and educate and enforce. If you'd like to learn more, there's going to be a webinar on Tuesday, and this takes you straight to that link. And also to join the challenge, locally elected officials can join online at this link or email their team leader's contact information to pedbikesafety@dot.gov. So we just want to let everyone know that this challenge is happening, and if you'd like to let your locally elected officials know about it, that was that. And then our next item is the National Association of City Transportation Officials Urban Street Design Guide. This is what the book looks like on the left. This is basically a toolbox of tactics cities across the country are using to make streets safer, more livable, and economically vibrant. It outlines basically a roadmap of how to do this and bring these kinds of projects to fruition. The NPO has purchased some of these books, and we're going to provide one to each Palm Beach, each local government represented on the Palm Beach County NPO board. So we have copies of those. But also a lot of the information that's in this book is provided online at this, and this is what the website looks like at this link below. Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Any questions, anyone? Okay, great.
I have a quick question, probably unrelated, but we have a lot of recent news about people getting run over and the driver of the vehicle taken off. Is there any initiative to work with the law enforcement officials with educating drivers about the seriousness of running over a bicyclist? I mean, it happened twice coming out of a gated community. So I was wondering if there's anything going on with that.
So that's one of the challenges for the mayors, to undertake more of this education to the public, but also to enforcement officers on bicycle and pedestrian laws and the way bicyclists should be behaving, pedestrians, and the way drivers and the rights that each have. I know that recently, are you familiar with the Aaron Cohen Act of the hit and run?
Oh, yeah, that happened
recently,
yes.
Trying to create more severe penalty for hit and run incidents.
The trouble is no one knows anything about the penalties they take off.
Yeah, so it's an education issue.
Is there anything in the works? I mean, we're talking about having the police have a camera on. If I was a bicyclist out there, I'd have a camera on my back, so at least it would record the car and the person who hit me.
Black box.
Yeah. Well,
it's a GoPro on
the back of his helmet.
Yeah.
Is there any thought to try to get the bicyclist to do that to?
Because
looking at is
it's called GoPro.
If the drivers know that they're being recorded, then they'll be careful and not hit the bicyclist. And if they get two or three people caught that way, then it would likely change behavior.
Yeah, I haven't heard of anything like that, but I think that it's really it is an education and enforcement issue. Because I think that the more we educate drivers and and cyclists and law enforcement officers, and more we can all work together to all, you know, behave correctly and know the rules of the road and rights.
Okay. Yeah, I just comment on that because it's something that wouldn't do me any good, because you cannot identify a car from the front, because Florida does not have front license plates. And I think that one thing that Florida could do to improve the safety of pedestrians, bicyclists, and everybody else is to have front and rear license plates.
That's a good point.
So you can identify a car. Otherwise, you can't. I was hit by a car just last week, and I got out of the car. I got out of my car to walk back to to talk to the other driver. He backed up and took off. And there was no way I could identify him because, you know, you can't read a license plate at 30 miles an hour, 30, 40 miles an hour. And he was gone. So, you know, I couldn't even take a picture. I was going to take a picture of his license plate, but he was gone. There was no front license plate. So, it's one of the things that always bothered me here. In places where I've lived, I always have two license plates.
It's because the prisoners made license plates in the old days. Remember, they only wanted one plate.
And a lot of prisoners. And safer people, safer streets, which is the purpose of the initiative.
Yeah.
Finding solutions to these, obviously, they're concerned. Bicycle accidents have doubled just recently. Everybody's on the phone and they're driving, and it's more than one thing. It needs a comprehensive approach, which is, I think, what the program is.
And Florida's not ranked very well, or ranked worse for pedestrian hit by car incidents.
Very well.
It's definitely something that we can work towards improving.
Okay, thank you. Let's go on to the correspondence we have here.
I just comment on 3D, which is the DOT policy statement on bicycle and pedestrian accommodation regulations. I just think that when we consider these things locally, we should ignore the second to last bullet, which says remove snow.
Okay, correspondence.
Mr. Chair, included for your consideration, just general information, is two entities have taken up positions opposing the delay of the State Road 7 construction project from 60th to North Lake. And I need to amend that and say that one more added its name to the list yesterday. The County Commission voted to adopt a resolution objecting to the delay from fiscal year 16 to fiscal year 20 as well. So that was an item that came up when we reviewed the work program. The MPO board formally objected to the DOT's proposed delay of construction from fiscal year 16 to fiscal year 20, and now these three entities have followed suit and objected to that delay. And then the second item there is DOT's response to the MPO board's objection, and the response to that particular item basically says, we're not going to change the work program that we presented to you because it's a balancing act, and we found this is the way that we were able to balance the funding. However, we're committing to work with you when we develop the next program to try to move the money back into as early a year as possible. We're going to target fiscal year 17. That's their response to us. Target year fiscal year 17 for construction funding of State Road 7. But they're just providing a commitment to work with us to try to bring it back from fiscal year 20 to closer to 16, where it was originally scheduled.
Isn't the environmental lawsuit still going on?
The challenge period has not even begun because an action has not been issued.
The city said they're going
to. So they.
They hired their consultants.
The DOT, Federal Highway, is still in the process of doing the environmental assessment. They haven't yet issued a finding of no significant impact. Once they do that, that opens the challenge period, is my understanding. And then the city or any other affected party may elect to file a challenge for the project.
The timing may not be relevant until that's settled, because that could take that if it's close. We're going to be challenged. And that could take some time.
Yeah.
So even if they bring it back in time,
it might not be that critical of.
Yes,
is acceptable.
We need to complete the challenge process so that there's an environmental approval to allow the project to be built. And the other obstacle that stands in the way, not an obstacle, but the other step in the process is there is one parcel that has to be acquired. It's a cell tower parcel along the corridor that until the environmental assessment has been finalized, the state is not permitted to acquire that piece of right-of-way necessary to construct that last leg.
Is there a tower there?
There's a cell tower.
Which side of the right-of-way?
It's directly south of the Iris community.
Right.
The community's there, then you have
Canal. There's a radio transmission tower.
Yeah, maybe it's radio.
It's a radio. Yeah, and there's a transportation corridor in front of it.
I don't believe that corridor
they
is
need,
protected
they
right
do need, They do need a little bit extra.
Yep.
Yeah, for the curve.
And then there's, potential acquisition for the curve. So those are the steps, as I understand them, that are necessary before.
So a cell company owns it?
But the environmental assessment.
Like Bell South or someone owns it?
I don't remember the ownership.
Yeah.
It's a local radio station.
Oh, yeah? Is
okay, the other correspondence.
I think you misspoke, sir. The acceptance of the environmental assessment doesn't mean they can build a road. They still have to apply for permits. They have to get a permit from South Florida Burn Management District and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, right? And then it becomes an actionable item.
Okay.
They probably have applied, they just don't have it. Until
they haven't applied yet.
They haven't even applied.
They cannot apply until they get a little of federal funds.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time. Okay, I'm trying to get everybody out of here by three.
You're doing good.
Okay. Correspondence, FDOT, C3C2. Draft tentative.
I spoke to them.
You already took care of that one, right? So that's it. Summary points of the MPO meeting is for everybody's read and review. Anybody have any comments on that?
No.
Okay.
You have member comments on it. I just want to ask if when you have the April 1st thing fully scheduled, if you would send a notice out maybe with the March notice that so that we can schedule the whole day. Never know what can happen when you're retired.
And
2 months from now.
I assume that
George is going to be able to do
that. That's correct. That was our intention. That would be
early in the evening.
Okay. Next meeting is March 4th, everyone. Any other comments? We need a motion to adjourn?
Yeah.